I now continue with topic number one. A hologram is a very unusual kind of photograph. To make one, the film is exposed using a laser and a set of mirrors and lenses. And to make the holograph image on the film visible later on, laser light must again be used. When you look at a hologram, it is as if you were looking through a window at the real object. You can move back and forth, up and down, and see it from different angles, in three-dimensional detail. By contrast, of course, a conventional photograph is flat and looks the same from all angles. Holograms are also different in another way. If you tear a normal photograph into several pieces, you ruin it. Each piece contains only a disconnected fraction of the total, but not so with a hologram. If you cut up a holographic film into several pieces, each piece still contains almost the entire image. There is some loss of detail, but basically it's all there. It's this fact that led years ago to the Russian breakthrough in biological computer brains for their robotoids. For quite some time, scientists in the intelligence community worldwide studying the human brain have known one very important fact. That fact is that a portion of a human brain can be removed through accident or surgery, and yet the person still retains most of his original memory. So in this respect, the memory in a human brain is like a hologram. Nowadays, the relationship between holography and human memory is beginning to be understood in the West. For example, Dr. Carl Prebram, a neuropsychologist at Stanford University, wrote about it recently in the magazine Psychology Today. As he pointed out, the implications of holography are enormous, both for brain research and for computers. But this relationship was first recognized not in America, but in a research laboratory at Russia's Siberian Science City, Novosibirsk. The reason the Russians have scooped the West in many recent scientific discoveries is not that they are supermen while we are mental midgets. Instead, it has to do with the way they organize their efforts in science and technology. This organization is totally different from that in the West, and it's turning out to be far more efficient. For one thing, when it comes to research, communications in Russia are far superior to those in the West. There are more than 5,000 research centers and laboratories in Russia doing research and development of all kinds, and they are all linked together by vigorous communications, not only within each scientific field, but between different fields. There's also a fundamental difference in what is discussed in Russian technical literature as compared with the West. In the West, a scientist usually publishes a technical paper only to report a success of some kind. If he carries out a research project that fails, he generally publishes nothing about it. But in Russia, many failures and problems are discussed very openly in the technical literature. As a result, many areas of research meet a very different fate in Russia than in the West. Here in America, an elaborate and expensive scientific project may come very close to success, but fall through because of a key missing ingredient. When that happens, very little is published about it. But in Russia, the researchers describe their problems and failures. And among the thousands of other scientists nationwide, one might have the answer. So the Russian system, which is built around cooperation, often produces success. But the Western system, especially in America, is built around jealousy, and it often leads to failure. It's happened many times, my friends, and it happened several years ago in robotoid brain development. Last month, I revealed that the Russians can manufacture organic robotoids, which are almost exact carbon copies of real human beings. This is done by a process that simulates the genetic coding of the person to be copied. It sounds a little like cloning, but it's not. A clone of a human would itself be a human. But an organic robotoid is not human. It's an artificial life form, like an animal in some ways, but like a computerized machine in others. Every Russian robotoid has what is called a holographic brain. This brain duplicates essentially the entire memory of a person being copied. The key to doing this is a new technique called an ultrasonic cerebral hologram. Using high-frequency sound waves, which are inaudible, a complete three-dimensional picture is made of a person's brain. This is a painless, non-destructive process, and under the proper conditions, it can be done without the person even being aware of it. Last month, I revealed that the Russians are using Nelson Rockefeller's hit list to weed out Bolsheviks here in America. And for roughly 3 years, they have been preparing for this day. They have been secretly making cerebral holograms of the people on the list at every opportunity. This has been done to every person on Rockefeller's list who has visited Russia or Eastern Europe in the past 3 years. When an organic robotoid is made to simulate, for example, our late President Jimmy Carter, two major factors are involved. One is the genetic coding required to simulate Carter's appearance, voice, fingerprints, and so on. The other is a holographic image of Carter's brain. This image is a complete record of the neuron patterns which existed in Carter's brain at the moment the hologram was made. Therefore, it contains all of the memory and knowledge Carter had up to that moment. When a Carter robotoid is made, the biological computer in its head is caused to form according to the holographic record of Carter's brain. However, certain portions of the robotoid computer are caused to deviate from the holographic record. The end result is a biological computer, which has to be programmed, but which contains essentially all of Carter's memory, involuntary mannerisms, and the like. As a result, a Carter robotoid will automatically do certain kinds of things without the need for specific programming. For example, a Carter robotoid will seem to recognize old friends. That's because the computer memory of the robotoid reproduces Carter's memory of that friend. The holographic process puts it there automatically without the Russian programmers even having to know it's there. Organic robotoids are such amazing creatures that they are still a subject of questioning and debate. This is true even among the Russian scientists who made them a reality. For example, robotoids seem to have no true instinct for self-preservation. In this regard, they act like machines, simply doing as they are told to do. By contrast, both humans and animals generally have the instinct for self-preservation. Robotoids can be programmed for self-preservation. But they are equally willing, if willing is the word, to perform suicide missions. Exploratory one-way trips into space are only one example of this. If a space mission looks too dangerous to risk the life of an experienced cosmonaut, a robotoid can now be used. The robotoid copy of the cosmonaut is already trained the moment it's made, thanks to its holographic memory. Organic robotoids look and act so much like human beings that it's hard for us to get used to the idea that they are not human. But the Russians decided several months ago that the stakes are too high not to employ them. And so, the silent Russian invasion of America by robotoids is now well underway. Topic number two. The Russian strategy is to work from the top down in dismantling Bolshevik power here in the United States. In this respect, they are doing the same thing, in principle, as they did in overthrowing Bolshevik power in Russia. Within Russia itself, the overthrow process made use of human doubles. These doubles were Christians, with a level of dedication that is almost unthinkable in the West. They underwent plastic surgery at the expense of a lifelong change in their appearance. They spent years in detailed study of the persons they were to replace. And then, once they had replaced powerful people, they saw to it that other members of their Christian sect acquired positions of power. Over the years, untold numbers of these Christian doubles in powerful positions were eventually found out. When that happened, they were purged by the Bolsheviks. But when they died, they took with them the knowledge of the identities of other Christians whom they had placed in power. And so, with every Christian they killed, the Bolsheviks were gradually sealing their own fate. They never caught on to the master takeover plan of the native Russian Christians until it was too late. Today, the Russians are putting that experience to use again in their robotoid strategy to take control of America. Bolshevik power is always centralized, so the Russians are starting with the head of the Bolshevik serpent. From there, they intend to work outward gradually to the many tentacles of Bolshevik power. As of now, the White House and Cabinet are under complete control by Russia. According to my latest intelligence report, only one member of the Carter Cabinet is still alive. All the rest, including the ad hoc Gang of Four, have been replaced by Russian robotoids. Likewise, the United States now has a Supreme Court made up of 9 Russian robotoids. And now Russia is focusing on the main members of the United States Senate who are opposing SALT II. When Carter Robotoid No. 3 was in Vienna earlier this month for the SALT II summit, he acted like a puppy dog around Leonid Brezhnev No. 2. And Brezhnev II, the human double for the late real Brezhnev, likewise treated the alleged Carter like a puppy. Whenever he tired of talking or became hungry, Brezhnev II simply got up and walked off. And the grinning replica of the late Jimmy Carter would follow obediently at his heels. Finally, on June 18, the Carter Robotoid set the world on its ear by kissing and hugging Brezhnev II after the SALT II signing ceremony. While the process of takeover is underway, the Russians will not render the robotoids vulnerable to neutralization by the Bolsheviks. For that reason, the robotoids, which have already replaced certain senators, are continuing to pretend that they oppose SALT II. To do otherwise would attract attention prematurely. But the really bitter opposition to SALT II is coming from people who don't know what is going on. My friends, the Russians are now speaking from strength. They are not bluffing. A few days ago, on June 25, Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko went out of his way to demonstrate this fact. It is a very rare occurrence for Gromyko to give a news conference, and even more rare for him to speak in English. But on the 25th, he gave a 2-hour news conference in Moscow. And to make sure he got his point across in no uncertain terms, he spoke in English. He declared that there must be no changes whatsoever in the SALT II treaty. And he said, quote, "I tell you frankly, it is impossible to resume negotiations. It would be the end of negotiations, the end, no matter what amendments would be made." Then, after a moment's pause, he added firmly, "Fantastic situation," unquote. My friends, the ratification of SALT II could be the litmus test that will decide between peace and war for America and Russia. 21 months ago, on September 27, 1977, America lost the decisive battle of the Harvest Moon in space to Russia. That evening, as I reported that month in Audio Letter 26, Gromyko delivered a SALT II ultimatum to the White House. Meanwhile, excited news reports said there had been a breakthrough in SALT II. That was a lie, as I told you at the time, and events since then have proven that it was a lie. Now Russia's ultimatum for SALT II is being repeated, and for the last time. When SALT II is ratified, secret provisions of the treaty will begin America's surrender by means of unilateral disarmament. The Russians are presently trying to achieve this ratification by replacing as few senators as possible with Robotoids. This approach is an act of mercy by the Kremlin, which could now robotize the entire Senate if it wished, and at will. This means there remains a slim chance that the Bolsheviks will somehow find a way to upset SALT II. But if they do, it will be, as Gromyko put it, the end. It will be the end of SALT II. It will also be the end of any remaining Russian restraint or mercy toward their Bolshevik enemies. And if the Russians should finally conclude that their plans for peace are hopeless, it will really be the end, because then they will do as Gromyko threatened at the White House 21 months ago. That is, they will give America the war which our former rulers tried so hard to bring about. My friends, the top priority of the new Christian rulers of Russia is to prevent nuclear war one, if possible. That's why the decision was made early this year, 1979, to deploy the Robotoids. If they had not done that, Saudi Arabia oil fields would have vanished in nuclear fireballs last month. The plan for an Israeli preemptive strike against Saudi Arabia, which I first made public late in 1975, would have been carried out. But as I reported last month, two top-secret Middle East shuttles were carried out to stop the plan. One shuttle was in late April, the other during mid-May. The shuttles involved Robotoid replacements for top American officials, and so far, Saudi Arabia has been saved. If the Israeli strike against Saudi Arabia had been carried out, this would have provided the desired excuse for the contrived gasoline lines we are now seeing. For months, they have been diverting petroleum products to other countries at a handsome profit instead of building up normal supplies here. By now, they were expecting the Saudi Arabia strike to be an accomplished fact. Under those conditions, we Americans would have simply accepted gasoline shortages, and the shortages would have been worsening fast on the way to a declaration of a national emergency. By the autumn of this year, the Bolshevik plan for an American nuclear first strike against Russia would have been carried out. So the plan, which I outlined in AUDIO LETTER 37 last August, would now be in full swing. But by stopping the Saudi Arabia strike, at least for the time being, the Russians have so far kept the peace. Right now, Israel is frustrated and is taking it out on southern Lebanon. Yesterday, Israel violated her agreement with the United States and used F-15s to attack alleged Palestinian bases there. But the Russian Robotoid replacement for Secretary of State Cyrus Vance ordered the State Department to issue an immediate and very stern written protest to Israel. The Russians have also put the big oil companies of the now headless Rockefeller cartel in a very embarrassing spot. Without a Saudi Arabia disaster to point to, they have no excuse to give for the gasoline shortages now taking place. But at the same time, they cannot instantly increase supplies because they started turning down their own oil spigots months ago. So they have outsmarted themselves, my friends. Americans are growing more angry by the day, because almost everyone can tell that it's all a big swindle. On all sides, there is beginning to be a growing chorus of "nationalize the oil companies." The Russians are using their Robotoids in an attempt to stop the Bolshevik war schemes. And they are doing so even though they know there's a risk to themselves in what they are doing. Bolsheviks have infiltrated into positions of power throughout American society, so rooting them out is a gigantic challenge. This is especially true in the military. A quarter century ago, the late Senator Joseph McCarthy made a genuine and brave attempt to stop this infiltration, but America's Bolsheviks succeeded in cutting him down, using tactics far worse than those of which he was accused. So today, there are Bolsheviks at every level and in every branch of the United States military. Using their robotoids, the Russians may be able to ferret them out within 18 months to 2 years. But during that time, Bolshevism will remain a very dangerous force here in America. The Bolsheviks may well keep on trying to find a way to surprise and destroy Russia. So if Russia's rulers of today shared the Bolsheviks' fascination with war, they would not bother to use the robotoids. Instead, they would just stir up a confrontation between Russia and America and then unleash their space triad. Since late 1977, as I've reported in my tapes, there have been 7 Russian particle beam weapons bases on the near side of the moon. These could start pounding American strategic targets worldwide into dust without producing radioactive fallout. If the United States attempted to counterattack with ICBMs, they would be blasted during launch by the cosmospheres now floating overhead. Under 37 Russian Cosmos interceptors, now in orbit, would continue to deny America a military toehold in space. These satellites are manned and armed with charged particle beam weapons. They finished destroying America's spy satellites over a year ago, as I reported in Audio Letter 33. But at the very least, such a war would kill tens of millions of people, mostly in the United States. And if things got out of hand, a full-fledged thermonuclear war could kill hundreds of millions. My friends, the rulers of Russia today are Christians, and to them, nuclear war is insanity if it can be avoided. And so they are using their robotoids. Earlier this month, on June 16, Leonid Brezhnev No. 2 summed up Russia's attitude at the SALT II summit in Vienna. He said, quote, "God will not forgive us if we fail," unquote. Many people were shocked to hear those words, but I reported the explanation long ago in my audio letters, such as number 38. Russia's leaders are out to save their own souls. Topic number 3. My friends, we are now living through a critical and confusing period. Most of our neighbors are asleep, unaware that their destinies are hanging in the balance. And for those of us who are awake, it is a difficult and lonely time. I don't think anyone could express it any better than Dr. Harry Schultz. In the late June 1979 issue of his famous International Investment Advisory letter, he mentions that his readers often cannot understand or believe his investment advice because he has always been ahead of his time. And here's how he expresses it, quote, "To gain universal appeal, you must be too late, not too early. To be popular, you must predict and write what even the general public have already perceived to be happening," unquote, and how true. More and more, the events we see will be reflecting Russia's gradual takeover of the United States. But at the same time, things which were put into the pipeline by the 4 Rockefeller brothers before they died will be gradually winding down. Our present manipulated gasoline shortages are a good example. These are things which were set in motion long ago, and they have too much momentum to come to a halt overnight. The same is true of Bolshevik schemes, which have been gathering steam in the United States now for nearly 2 years. As I've explained in the past, the Bolshevik mentality is one in which human life is only a tool of power. Last November 1978, the Guyana tragedy took place, a military operation in which hundreds of civilian lives were sacrificed as a ploy. In Audio Letter 40, I described what took place there in detail. Then, in March, there was the Bolshevik sabotage of the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant. In Audio Letter 45, I reported what had been done. Its purpose was to help in the Bolshevik shutdown of America, using human lives as a tool of revolution. And only late last month it happened again, when an American Airlines DC-10 was sabotaged by explosives by remote control. The result was the tragic, senseless, inhuman inferno of American Airlines Flight 191 in Chicago. But the Chicago DC-10 crash was for nothing, because the Russians, using their robotoids, are undoing the Rothschild Bolshevik shutdown plans for America. This is just one example of the cross-currents now going on behind the scenes. My friends, the United States is now being transformed into a satellite state of the Soviet Union. So the schemes which were set in motion, first by the Rockefellers and then by the Bolsheviks, will gradually fade away. Already robotoid replacements for top American officials are beginning to subtly speak the Russian line on major issues. And when it comes to SALT II, the Carter robotoids are not even being subtle about it. Every few days, Moscow repeats, quote, "We will accept no amendments," unquote. And each time an echo comes forth from a Carter robotoid, quote, "We will accept no amendments," unquote. My friends, in Audio Letters 44 and 45, I propose that the Christ ones of America go on a pilgrimage for peace to meet with Russia's leaders. The response to my proposal from American Christians has been overwhelming. Only a handful of ministers and church officials have responded. Instead, it has been primarily the Christians in all other walks of life. Already enough people have expressed interest to fill up not just one, but several Aeroflot jet transports. Up to now, my friends, I have had no official reply from the Russian government about my proposal. So far, they have not turned us down, but a pilgrimage like this would be a very serious matter. Whatever they decide, we cannot go back to business as usual, because, my friends, nothing will ever be the same again. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you. And may God bless each and every one of you.